Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch
here on LA Talk Radio. Yeah, another great show for you as usual. Today we're going to help you become a little more enlightened, meditative, a little more chill. If you read my social media promo this morning, improve your relationships, manage some of those addictive behaviors and habits, kind of take care of that burnout that you're all experiencing. You know, I was just talking to my guest a couple of minutes before we went live here, and you know, we were talking about you know, what's going on here in the Los Angeles area. Now he is calling from Hawaii. I love to say that, and I'm jealous. I'm just gonna say it, because there is a consciousness here in Los Angeles. It's a bit chaotic, so it is difficult sometimes. And whatever metropolitan city you're listening to right now around the world, you know, in densely populated environments, that it's hard to sort of become still. Well, it is difficult for many people; others maybe not. But becoming still, getting out of the chaos, and sort of keeping yourself away from the energy of others. And the speed with which we live, and the goal for, you know, I'll just say abundance. it's just a hamster, you know, wheel that a lot of us experience. So we're going to be talking about, you know, getting yourself together, overcoming negative habits, resolving relationship issues, replacing burnout with passion and joy with my guest. So I just want to do a little quick intro here. You've heard me talk about, you know, my work with some of my patients. And many times I have them share some information about their childhood experiences or how their upbringing felt. Because, I mean, come on, that's the original imprint, usually, that we receive from those who are caring for us. The looks, the attitude, the vibe in the home, you know, the community, that kind of thing. But a lot of them say to me, you know, I have had a pretty great childhood for the most part. Really, I have no problems. I had a great home and everybody was cool and it was seemingly okay. But the thing is that it's not only the environment, but it's the vibe of society out there. And all the generations have their own stuff. And of course, we can talk about what's going on right now with social media. That's so competitive and difficult to sort of, and I am using negative words, okay, guys? I'm just saying it. We'll change, I promise. But sometimes when we grow up in certain societies, there's still out there, there's a vibe in schools and, you know, groups of shame and guilt and a lot of judging others. That's what's going on now. Blaming others, that kind of thing. So, again, if we're looking at the social platforms today in social media, it's all about creating what I call sort of a false impression of our happy, successful, popular, sexy, exciting lives. You know, we're sitting there at home in our pajamas and our fuzzy bunny slippers going, God, I'm so lonely. Okay. So it's sort of what I call living behind a curtain, you know, of falsehoods. So many of us haven't been taught how to have healthier minds. In other words, how to not have such erratic and emotional feelings and thoughts. So with that being said, we're going to find out how to overcome those habits and sort of get your act together a little bit in your lives and be just happier people and more centered with my special guest, who I'm going to introduce right now without further ado. His name is J.F. Benoit. He's been counseling people struggling with addiction, mental health, relationship issues for over 20 years. And he also co-founded the Exclusive Hawaii. It's a non-12-step residential addiction treatment center with his wife, Joyce. That was back in 2011. And he is the creator of the therapeutic methodology called experiential engagement therapy. Okay. And it focuses on really addressing a person's underlying core beliefs. And he's known for his authentic experiential techniques, maximizing long-term change. He's a certified option process mentor, counselor, internationally certified leader in the Mankind Project. That's a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting men's personal growth. And, you know, he's been around for quite a long time, although he doesn't look it, beginning his studies in human development and empowerment back with the Robert Hargrove and Relationships Inc. group. So let's talk about his latest book, which is called Addicted to the Monkey Mind. Y'all know what the monkey mind is, right? Well, we're going to find out if you don't. Change the programming that sabotages your life. All right. How you doing, JF? So nice to have you here on the couch.
It's wonderful to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. And thank you so much for this book. What a great read. Most helpful.
Wonderful.
The monkey mind's been around forever, that concept. And, many people heard of the concept, but they're like, oh, this is so cool. This is so new. No, it's forever been around. And can you sort of share a little bit about what that means and how that monkey mind that we're all addicted to, actually, can really sabotage our lives?
Yeah, absolutely. The core of, I think, what's epidemic in our society is how unconscious we are about the fact that the thoughts we're having all day long are actually producing the end result of what's happening. So most of us get caught into believing that I got caught in traffic, or I'm in line at the bank and somebody stepped in front of me, or whatever it is that's unfolding. We seem to think that that's the cause of our reaction.
Yes.
Okay. And that's the biggest illusion that we live under.
Hmm.
And that's what I call the monkey mind, meaning that those thoughts, in a way, we're in constant fused thinking. And what that basically means is we have a thought and we hook onto that thought without ever reflecting on it or having space with that thought. And we constantly are operating under a story that tells me the stimulus is causing my response.
So I'm going to give up my power to what's going on out there or whatever I've created in my mind negatively about
that situation. Exactly. And not only that, so that's the result of that mind, but we're not aware of it, and we're not aware of where it comes from, and we're not really in control of it. It's more like the monkey mind, in a way, is in control of us. I often say to people, most of us don't realize that the body is doing the thinking for you.
Oh, God, yes. Yikes!
Right? Because we've been conditioned to respond the way we respond, right?
Exactly.
It's like the partner says, why didn't you do the dishes? And the person comes unglued.
Right.
It's like, why? That was
so
just
funny.
A question, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's not personal. It's just, here. But you're right about the body taking over. I mean, I've been, kind of studying a lot of this lately, and, our habitual thoughts, repetitive patterns and all that, are there, hardwired, what's all that, thoughts that fire together, wire together, and then pretty soon our bodies are taking over, the body's leading the mind.
Let me give you an example of what I really love to describe this is, imagine a little bit like, what happens for most of us is we're conditioned to think the way we do, but we're not aware that we were conditioned, right? So imagine all the things that we heard growing up.
Yeah.
Why didn't you do your homework? Why can't you be more like your sister? Mm. You're not going to eat all this, are you? Mm. You know, it just goes on and on and on, the list of these messages that we receive along the way. And
yes.
What ends up happening is we build a shame-based and fear-based way of thinking.
Yes.
And that's really the core of the monkey mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so imagine that this programming is, it would be the same as if, imagine if there's a dog in a room,
yeah,
and somebody walks in every day,
yep,
and kicks the dog.
Oh,
right?
Yes, yes.
And so over 20 years later, imagine that you walk into the room and now you want to love the dog. You want to just love on the dog.
Yeah, right? Right.
And is the dog going to go, oh, this is so wonderful now, you know, that now that you want to love me?
Right.
Right? And so that's the equivalent of us trying to tell our body. So the dog is the equivalent of the body. So the body's been conditioned like the dog, right?
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why people don't change, is because you're trying to tell yourself, hey, I'm wonderful, I'm smart, I'm powerful, I can do this, right? And then the next thing that happens is I react to the situation in front of me.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I have an outburst of anger or frustration or sadness, or I shut down. And so I'm like the dog who's been conditioned,
yeah,
in a way, to respond the way we do.
Yeah.
You know, so one of the reasons that people don't create change is because we have to go back to the body. We have to go back to addressing sort of the belief that the body is stuck into, in a way. It's like cellular memory,
yes,
almost.
Yes. Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
No, that's beautifully said. And in your book, of course, you talk about how everybody's monkey mind is sort of different. And as I sort of talked about at the beginning, it's shaped by the experiences we all went through. And you just described those, you know, kind of accusatory statements that we grow up with, and the why didn't yous, and the or command statement, you need to do this, or those you statements, you are, you know, those labeling things. And boy, those just imprint on us so deeply. So it's not a good thing.
Well, wow. And here's the thing. What's dangerous about conditioning for most of us, mm-hmm, is, you know, Einstein said it best. He said, you can't use the same mindset that created the problem to trying to solve it.
Mm.
And so that's usually what happens for most people when they become conscious. Let's say somebody's trying to realize,
yeah,
that now they're seeing the question they're being asked through the lens of the way they grew up, and they're not really hearing the question in the beginning, but then they start shaming themselves,
yeah,
for the fact that I did it again, right?
Mm,
so
yes.
How many times somebody lost their temper and the first thing they think is, oh, I can't believe I did that.
Right, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Or you go to a social event and you say something to somebody, and then you drive back in your car and you say, I can't believe I said that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's this constant mind,
yeah,
that actually, yeah, creates the problem. And then we're using that same mindset that is shame-based and fear-based trying to solve it. But
right,
all it ever does is create more anxiety. And then I repeat the same behaviors and I'm like a hamster on a wheel.
Exactly. And those behaviors grow and grow, and those habits, the habitual thought patterns are growing. And so we're ruminating every day about past situations or things we should have done, right? Or, wow, how did I come off to other people? Or was I stupid? And then that's the whole thing about beating ourselves up, like you said. And that is, jeez,
yeah,
man, I know you hear this every day in your work, don't you, from patients?
Yeah, and it's amazing where I think we don't get how much we want to belong,
yeah,
and how dysfunctional we are in the ways that we go about attempting to belong.
Mm. Yes, yes, it is. It is sort of, yeah, dysfunctional. And, you know, they have a lot of psychological tools that you know and you've learned and all that. But sometimes, like you said, you can't use that same operating system, as Einstein said, that same mind to sort of, you know, kind of cure the issue here. You got to go somewhere else. So just kind of jumping into one of my favorite parts of your book. Well, there's a lot of favorite parts, but you talk about and suggest that our goal is to become the observing mind rather than the monkey,
mm-hmm,
mind, in order to just start to sort of tweak things a little bit. So can you talk more,
yeah,
about what that's about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So The key, you know, one of the things that we've heard so much now about the book that people are sharing with us, they're saying they love how relatable it is, right? So here you follow these two characters, Kevin and Elizabeth, and they're struggling with things that we're all struggling with, right? Relationship issues, career issues, you know, with your kids, with, you know, and so you kind of relate to their issue, and they are not aware of their monkey mind, right? And so what starts happening is they develop a consciousness around the monkey mind. And one of the first thing that's probably the most, you know, difficult and challenging aspect of the monkey mind is that we want to make it bad. So we want to criticize ourselves for the way we operate. But that's exactly what we were just saying, right?
Yeah.
So we have to develop a new mindset in order not to be stuck like the hamster on the wheel. And the new mindset is a lot less complicated than we think it is. And it's just the ability to observe the monkey mind. So imagine developing an awareness mind instead of a fix-it mind. Because the monkey mind is addicted to want to fix things. It wants to fix everything, and it's using the same method to trying to fix things that you were programmed to think, which is shame yourself and you'll become a better person.
Okay? I am not deserving.
Criticize yourself and you'll become more thin and beautiful, you know? It's like, and so what happens is that voice, that monkey mind, creates anxiety, and then I repeat the same behavior. So most of us, it's very, because that's the real addiction to the way we operate, okay? It's very difficult at the beginning to understand that if I just observe that mindset, it would be enough to change.
So how would that work? So roll it out for me. How does that observing that mind work? How do we do that?
So the first step, so we're going to go back to the body, right, and the dog example. What does the dog need most? The dog needs to be loved. It needs to start feeling like it's safe, right? So the first step in consciousness and awareness is to go back to the body. So what we do in this society is as soon as we have discomfort of any type, right, we've been conditioned to try to avoid it at all costs. We either discharge our discomfort by getting angry with somebody else, or we implode with it, or we just shut down, or we start feeling depressed, or we have all the, or we start using drugs or alcohol, or we start being workaholics, or we start having bad eating habits. And so all of those, are coping mechanisms, to avoid discomfort. So an observing mind guides us the opposite way. So meaning start going towards the discomfort. And it's very sort of initially counterintuitive, right?
Yeah,
it just
sure.
feels like, what am I doing? Like this this seems so strange. But we have such anxiety about discomfort that we don't really know what it's like to have the experience of discomfort. Because in itself, what we see is people report, when I guide them through all these different protocols we've designed at the center, what they report over and over again is once they go through one experience, they go, oh, well, that wasn't so bad. You know, that really wasn't so bad. So it's the angst and the anxiety that we keep perpetuating about any type of discomfort, But if you think of it like if you're learning to ride a bicycle, at what point do you actually learn to ride it? Is it by talking about it? Or is it really that the first time you get on it and you start losing your balance and then you actually maybe fall and scrape your knee? But in that moment is the learning experience, right? So if you get back on it and you start riding it, when you start losing your balance, your memory and you will be able to recall the discomfort of what happened and be able to readjust your balance, right? So the same is true with our core beliefs and our programming. We have to be able to have an experience of it, and then we're our adult self today, be able to verify the validity of that belief system.
Makes a lot of sense. So, by the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and that's me. In case you haven't been listening for 10 years, and... my special guest today is J.F. Benoit. He's an amazing man who has created quite a wonderful empire here in, not here, I wish I was there, in Hawaii. And he helps so many people through his years of just changing their lives. And he's written a wonderful book called Addicted to the Monkey Mind. You want to get this, guys. It's really a great, and it's a step-by-step self-help book that will really sort of wake up that body and that brain of yours. Change the programming that sabotages your life is what it's called, Addicted to the Monkey Mind. And we're just kind of talking about some of the tools that he suggests in the book. And we started out with the observing mind. We need to kind of shift to do that. And we need to have that experience to... Now, you're saying, JF, to just... We need to... It's sort of like slow exposure. Expose ourselves to those uncomfortable feelings that we've been suppressing or defocusing on through addictions or not nasty habits, right? You're saying kind of feel it. Get with it. Let it happen, right?
Well, and yeah, exactly. And one of the simplest way to do that is one of the things we teach at the center is a circular way of breathing.
Ah.
And what that is imagine if it's kind of like training yourself. I oftentimes say to people, imagine if you decide that you have 15 minutes, you know, every morning and every night before you go to bed,
mm-hmm.
where you assign yourself the discipline. It's like going to the gym, but for the mind.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And what you're doing is you're saying, I'm going to sit and breathe in this circular fashion. Because if you watch animals, cats, dogs,
mm-hmm.
they have a circular breath. Their stomach moves back and forth, and it never stops, right?
Yeah.
And we're the only creature that can actually stop the breath by overthinking, by over-identifying with thoughts.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So there's a very simple way to sit and just breathe. And for most people, it's very challenging because when we start doing that, the monkey mind gets overactive.
Uh-huh.
It starts going crazy. So imagine if you even try, like I say to people, give yourself 2 minutes, right? Put your timer on and sit and just try to breathe back and forth and just breathe, right? And then within seconds, your mind will say, how long is this going to go for?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And you know, like, well, wait a second. I just told myself I have 2 minutes to breathe. Why is my thought saying that?
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And it becomes very uncomfortable to sit there because the mind is trying to tell me to get up and go do things. And I have things to do and I have things to move, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So here it is. You see how fast the discomfort happens?
Yes.
And so imagine if we develop the muscle, right, to actually sit and breathe. And that's why I often say to people, make sure you use a timer. Because you want the timer to tell you when you're done. You don't want your monkey mind to tell you when you're done.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter necessarily how many, you know, minutes you choose, but it's a win every time you do it. Now, here's what happens if you actually develop this practice is when you're about to react on the long term, you actually will find yourself going to breath first.
Ah.
And that's really where the tool becomes effective.
Right.
Right? That now you want to be able to use this in your life instead of being caught in fused thinking with your monkey mind. You want to be able to be in charge of it.
Yes.
And until you develop the capacity to be at a body level, it's just going to control your life.
Oh, yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So if you develop that habit of, oh, got to breathe, monkey minds, I'm going into fear, I'm going into projection, I'm going into anger, I'm going, you know, it's like, wait a minute. So you just sort of habituate yourself to just start breathing. And is there a way to breathe? A lot of people say, you know, well, how should I breathe? And what's the best sort of technique that you suggest?
Yeah, so the one that we teach is a circular breath. So imagine that there's a balloon that fills your chest area all the way down to your belly button. Imagine it's a big round balloon, okay?
Yep.
And imagine that you're going to fill the balloon with air, and you want to start with your belly button. You want to fill the belly first because that will fill the lower lungs.
Ah.
And so as you fill up the balloon, as soon as it's full, now you want to empty it out all the way, and then you don't pause. As soon as it's empty, you fill it back up again.
Uh-huh.
And so as you keep doing that, you just go back and forth and you try to the best of your ability to put your focus on this movement of your breath.
Yes.
Now, what's going to happen is the monkey mind is going to go ballistic.
Right.
And the idea is that you're developing the muscle to observe it. That's the one of the main core of the observing mind is you want to be able to not go along with the thought, but just observe it.
Right.
And then the more you develop that, then the second step that we introduce is it's being in an inquiry mindset. That's the other skill of the observing mind, is that you're not in a monologue with your thoughts, but you have a way to question the validity of those thoughts.
So how do we sort of go there to question the validity? What's the process with that?
So with breath becomes awareness, right?
Yes,
so that's why breath is so essential to first develop. You know, so if I'm anxious, but I keep reacting from my anxiety, do I really know where it comes from?
Right.
I don't.
Yes.
And so if I have the capacity to breathe through it, and let's say I'm anxious, and now I'm realizing that let's say I'm anxious because let's say I loan money to somebody and they haven't followed through on their agreement and they haven't paid me back.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So the monkey mind will lead me towards the story that what's creating my anxiety is the fact that the person's not paying me back.
Uh-huh.
That's the story
that
it creates. It's like the stimulus is causing my response. For most of us, we buy into that over and over and over again. Okay?
Right, sure.
So when I start breathing and I introduce the breath in that anxiety, okay, one of the tools that we teach is called inside my skin versus outside my skin. So if my focus of attention for the reason in which I feel, so if my discomfort, if my story is that something outside my skin has caused the feeling, it's actually a story from the monkey mind or from my programming. It's not really the real issue.
Right.
So as I breathe and I use this tool of inquiry, is the reason that I come up for my discomfort, is it inside my skin or outside my skin? And that's a whole chapter right in the book that I talk about in Tools of Awareness.
Yes.
Is I can develop the ability to identify the real reason for my discomfort.
Right.
And so underneath, so I'll give you the shortcut of this.
Yeah.
Underneath the belief that it's because someone didn't pay me back.
Right.
It's that's the external story, but the internal story is there must be something wrong with me, or I must be stupid for having loaned money to somebody that's not paying me back.
Right, exactly.
So when we touch on that belief, we can check the validity of it. And we can say, is that true? Is it true if somebody didn't pay me back that makes me stupid, or that makes me less than, or that there's something wrong with me?
Sure. It makes
so
much sense.
The whole process of inquiry is definitely a little bit of a skill to learn initially, because they're very specific questions we can ask ourselves when we are caught in those moments of reactiveness, right? So first we go to the breath, and second we go to inquiry.
So the mindful inquiry, and you know, in your book, Addicted to the Monkey Mind, you talk about some of the cool tools about being curious about yourself. Kind of question your mindset and ask genuine questions to yourself. Question the way you feel and your physical responses and your external beliefs and your coping mechanisms. We're not going to go through those, folks, but I'm just sharing with you that these are all parts of how to question your mindset and the mindful inquiry, which is so important when you're being present in your body and, you know, just kind of owning your own experiences. So again, this is a step-by-step book, listeners, for you to just check yourself, and very comfortable, interesting, and you know, fascinating read that everybody can get with. And especially, you know, I love the stories that are intertwined about Kevin and Elizabeth and how they go through kind of their lives and deal with things, you know. So that's really cool. But
it was such an amazing experience to really make it really real for people that these are the issues we struggle with, you know. One of the things that I'm becoming more and more aware of is how we are really addicted to criticizing ourselves. Imagine if we went to the opposite. Imagine that if the monkey mind shows up and I ask myself, what is this mindset trying to accomplish? What's its intention?
Yes.
Right? So let's say somebody who's over-focused with their image of their body,
right,
which in LA is just like everywhere you go.
Oh yeah.
You know,
oh yeah.
Like how I look is like, you know.
Exactly. Like, you said
there's nothing more important than that, okay?
You
it's
said
just everything else is secondary.
No,
okay?
It's true. You,
so
yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Right?
Yep. Yep.
So imagine for a moment if I can start building a very kind relationship with that part of myself, that the intention behind looking good, I want to feel connected with others.
Right.
I want to feel like I'm being appreciated. I want to feel beautiful. I want to feel thin. I want
to.
And so imagine sitting down and writing those things down and really seeing how good the intention is. Okay, and feeling that in your body, just feeling like, wow, this is so awesome, right?
Yes.
And then write down next to it, write down how the monkey mind treats you.
Mm-hmm.
Just write down the thoughts. You're not going to eat all this, are you?
Yes.
Well, last night you ate some ice cream and that was over the top. And you know how many calories that was?
Yeah.
And look, you don't fit in that dress anymore. And so you start writing down all of those things.
Oh.
And then all you have to do is compare the two.
Yes.
And say, wait a second, right? Does this match? So the monkey mind is, the intention is beautiful, but what it does is make me feel like crap.
Exactly. Right.
Right?
So, yeah, totally.
And so that's the observing mind right there.
Right.
See, I just gave you a very simple
Perfect.
Way to
yes.
use the observing mind. And
yes.
and if we did this every day in the way that we have all these dysfunctional patterns, it would change the way we think and see things, and we would start treating ourselves a lot more compassionately.
Right.
You know?
Right, exactly. We really would. And I mean, it is kind of, you know, funny in a way. I mean, when we really write these things down and look at them, the chatter, you know, that goes on in our minds that are like, oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, look at her. She looks so great. Oh, you know, I'm a really bad person because I didn't, you know, it's just, if you really can take a look at those things and you, like you said, jot them down or text them to yourself, voice text them to yourself. It's just sort of like, oh my God, when we're really observing how much that brain tortures us.
You know, some,
yeah.
Some, a lot of what we've done at the center sometimes is we, once the person has had the understanding, the foundation, the program, and they feel safe and all that, we'll oftentimes just record their monkey mind and play it back to them.
Oh my gosh. I bet they crack up, right?
And I mean, you want to see some, like, I mean, it's insane when that's how unconscious we are. We're not really aware of what we're telling ourselves.
Wow.
And when you hear it, you go, this is crazy.
Yeah,
right? And
yes, exactly. And what are there, like, way over, like something like 50,000 of those, you know, thoughts a day that everybody says, you know, that all of the neurobiologists are saying we're being bombarded with these streams of consciousness that are all negative. I'm not deserving. It's that child brain, you know, the monkey mind. That's like, you're not this. You're bad. You don't deserve.
I tell you, we're pretty resilient if you think of it. Like when I see it that way, like I often say to people, if you saw a video of your childhood, you know, between 0 and 10, you would be in disbelief. You would say, somebody rigged up this video.
Like, right.
My mother didn't say this 10,000 times.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. It's like, wrong. You just shoved it down, kiddo, and it's popping up right now, you know. So it's true. And I don't, and you know, folks, I always say, I don't want to blame mom and dad, but, you know, we're not, basically. We're just saying, you know, understand that they have their own programming and they're trying to do the best they can do for the most part and with what they know. So they sort of teach us things to sort of keep us under control and keep us good citizens and all those things. But unfortunately, sometimes, like you said, JF, because of society and our environment, and not only in the home, but in the everything, educational systems, social systems, there's a lot of just shoulds and bombardment with this is how you have to be and appear. And it's, wow, there's so much going on right now, especially with social media, you know, all the pressure with that as well. So when we look at these goofy monkey mind statements that are so repetitive that come up for us all the time, we have to just sort of have a sense of humor about it and say, I don't deserve this. Why? what? Where did this come from? I'm going to start really being the observer and consciously changing these thoughts and relax.
Yeah.
And one of the greatest parts of your book, too, is about, you know, forgiving ourselves. Oh, my gosh. Why are we so filled with not forgiving ourselves? We're just so guilt-ridden and hard on ourselves all the time.
Yeah.
What's that about?
And, you know, the intention, again, behind that behavior, if you think of it, it's to make us a better person, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's constantly, and it's very, very strange because what I think the only missing link here is the fact that because we're so busy shutting down the discomfort in our body, we're not realizing that the mindset has a good intention but never produces the result. So we intellectually understand that, but we don't believe it.
Right.
So forgiveness is the ability to recognize that my shame-based and fear-based way of thinking will actually never deliver.
Right.
Once I have that awareness, once I really have that awareness, I start being kind to myself. And so it's not just a positive affirmation.
Yes.
It's imagine for a second if I think to myself, I didn't respond to Joe. I was supposed to send the email and the contract fell through because I didn't send the email and I feel really bad about myself, right? What's the purpose? The purpose is don't do this again.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
Just in the future, just be accountable. Okay.
Yes.
So I get it. But if I just use the mindset that doesn't forgive me, what it does is it produces anxiety that leads me to be unconscious again, and I will do it again and repeat the same mistake.
God, yes, exactly.
So forgiveness is that consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's the consciousness that I now can become aware of what happened the last time that I judged myself for something that I wish I had not done.
Right.
What happened?
Right.
Right? So, again, if I took a very simple way to write this down, and if I remembered five things I did before that I wish I hadn't done, and then I write down the way I judged myself and what happened, then I start noticing that I never felt better, that things didn't improve, and now I can actually bring love and kindness to myself and forgiveness because I realize that this is the way to create change.
Right. And, you know, that's a great explanation. It really is. By the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, my special guest today is J.F. Benoit, and he's written the book Addicted to the Monkey Mind, Change the Programming That Sabotages Your Life, Every Aspect. Folks, and we're going to tell you how you can find out more about JF and also pick up his book and possibly join him in Hawaii for some workshops and treatment if you like, right? So you talked about, you know, changing that mind, using the observational mind, and allow ourselves to have self-forgiveness. And how do we get from changing into the reality of, you know what? I do believe that I do deserve a break. I think it's so important to believe that. Like you said, you have to believe it. You can't just go with, you know, affirmations that say, I am not, I am very, very wealthy. I am a very, very popular. And you don't believe it. You've got to segue into that real knowingness. So
and it's a lot of it is because we are caught thinking. So we think that if we keep thinking that somehow our problems are going to get resolved, and we ignore the body. So if you look at the people who manifest things who are very successful, look at their bodies. Look at the way 70% of communication is nonverbal.
Right.
And that's a very well-known fact. So what is your body saying? So your mind might be telling you you're smart, you're successful, but what's your body saying?
Yes. Yeah.
When you say those things, your body's most likely saying, yeah, no, not really.
Exactly. And you're not talking right? You know, right, exactly. And you're talking about body language and how we express ourselves and the energy that we put out there, you know, that we're unconscious of, and our eye contact and our leaning forward and our smiles and our, you know, the gestures we use. You're not talking about, oh, that person's overweight and their body's showing that they're not, you know, no, you're not talking about that. You're just talking about that, changing that internal body system and you know, the natural flow of body language comes out when you're in a healthier place. It's amazing,
yeah.
Right?
And one of the ways, so what I'm talking about is retraining the body much more than trying to retrain your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you just stay with trying to, that's what positive affirmation is. It's
yes.
trying to retrain your mind without ever going to the body.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give you an example.
Okay.
Like, let's say you walk around, take 15 minutes to walk around. And as you walk around, just say, I'm grateful for, and finish the sentence.
Oh, yes.
Okay?
Ugh.
So I'm grateful for that there's cars so that we can move from one place to another.
Yep.
I'm grateful for the trees that are there because it gives me air to breathe.
Mm.
I'm really grateful for my niece that just had a beautiful celebration yesterday.
Mm.
So you just keep on going, keep on going, keep on going. You're going to see the pull of your body. There's going to be some, it's like as you keep going, the first thought that will happen is the monkey mind will go, you can't keep going that way. This is,
yes.
this is too long.
Right.
15 minutes is too long, right? So now you can start feeling what your body really believes.
Yes.
You're simply moving in the direction that you want. It's more gratitude in your life and feeling better.
Yes.
And you start experiencing the pull of your body.
Yes.
That's those kinds of muscle building, right? Of this is how we become an observing mind. This is how we create the change. It doesn't just happen.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
And this is where most people fall short, is because we don't apply it. We don't have simple concepts that we can apply on a daily basis that eventually shifts us from a monkey mind to an observing mind.
Yes.
It doesn't happen just on its own.
Right.
You know?
Yes. It doesn't. And I love the way, JF, that you sort of were talking about, I'm grateful for cars. I'm grateful for the beautiful trees that, you know, give us oxygen. You're going very general. Just start small, folks. Doesn't have to be a gigantic, you know, hairy, you know, I got to dig deep for this. You know, it's just like, wow, look at those beautiful cumulus clouds in the sky. I'm watching them flow now, and look at the blue patches, and thank you for this wonderful experience. Thank you for my belly to be full of cereal this morning, so I'm not dying in the afternoon of hunger. You know, whatever it can be. Thank you for letting me have this wonderful experience, like you said, with your niece, right? You know, the family members who we cherish or bring us joy. Thank you for these blessings. Thank you for all. Doesn't have to be huge and certainly not materialistic. Well, that too is fine, but you know, I would say start off just looking around you, being in the present moment, and like you said, you know, because that's real gratitude. You can't fake that, because you're looking at the beautiful trees,
and, and it's important to notice the tension that happens.
Right.
That's the key importance to the observing mind and how we create change.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the body is telling us something different. Meaning the body initially, when it's been conditioned to be under the influence of the monkey mind, when you start being grateful, there is a pull towards like, well, yeah, but let's move on to something else.
Yes.
This is taking too long. This is, you know, and just this ability to continue and to actually do it for the amount of time that you said you would do it, you actually, in that moment, are creating new neural pathways in your brain.
Mm, is that right? Mm, that's amazing.
So, the issue that I'm describing here, in modern psychology, we talk in terms of experience-dependent neuroplasticity.
Yep.
And what that means is that the way the neurons in the brain are firing currently, okay, which is a pattern of thought that appears to be rigid, was created by repetitive experiences.
Oh, yes.
And so if we just try to superimpose a thought over the experience, it never fully sticks. But if we're able to go to the experience itself and this time create a different outcome, now the neural pathways get redone. And so that's exactly what I'm describing in this simple exercise of saying what's grateful. If you're noticing that your body has an aversion,
right,
and you're not denying that aversion, you stay with it, you breathe through it, and you keep going with this new mindset, and then the body starts adjusting and go, oh,
yes. The body will start taking over, and therefore the mind will follow, basically, right? That's amazing. Real quick, because I do have some emails coming in, and I know there is a section in your book that is wonderful about helping with relationships. You talk a little bit about how we can change our programming in order to, you know, help us with overcoming and resolving some of our relationship issues. Can you just talk about some of those practices that can help us a little bit?
Absolutely. So one of the most challenging things that's happened in most of our relationship is the reactiveness in which we are consistently caught into. And I remember years ago when I first started on this path, I had the belief that if I walked out of an argument, right, then I meant that I wasn't committed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell you, that created a lot of conflict. Here's the biggest,
right?
You know, that's basically saying I'm committed to arguing with you.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
Exactly.
You're so funny.
That's gonna, you know, make it happen.
Yes.
So the first step that I teach in relationship is the understanding of the fact that when I'm triggered, as soon as I'm triggered, it is no longer about the other person. It is about my programming.
Right.
And if I try to resolve my programming with my partner or with my loved ones, it's going to backfire on me.
Right.
Okay?
Exactly.
And so we have to begin to stop that circus. It's a circus.
Yes.
And it will go nowhere. You know, I'll give you an example. I oftentimes say people are at the center and I'll say to them, what's one thing, let's say your partner says that upset you? And, you know, a lot of them struggle with addiction. And one person will say, well, my partner might say you're choosing alcohol over me. And I go, okay. So I said, imagine now they're looking at a chair and I say, we're going to repeat that to you over and over like a broken record.
Yep.
You just want to allow yourself to blow a gasket.
Yes.
So we start saying that statement, you're choosing alcohol over me, and the person goes, well, you know, I work hard all day and you don't know what I've done, and they just start blowing a gasket.
Right.
And as we let it roll for about 5 minutes, we stop and we go, what's going on? And they say, well, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And we go, what do you mean? And they say, well, this is going nowhere.
Right.
And we go, oh, you're aware that it's going nowhere.
You think?
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the first step of building healthy relationship is we have to develop a discipline to put a pause button. Okay. And oftentimes that can be the most challenging thing, but just to notice that you're triggered and saying to your partner, I need 5 minutes.
Yes.
Right? First step. I need a few minutes. Let me go be with myself for a couple minutes and find out what's going on.
Yes.
And that's when, if you use the breath and you use inquiry and you know how to use it, within 5 minutes you can turn things around.
Oh, it's true.
Because the more you get to know your programming,
right,
the more you get to know how you activate your programming inside the relationship, and you're reacting to your programming, not the person.
Exactly. It's so true, and it makes so much sense. And guys, I, you know, we just have a few minutes here real quick. What's the best way that people can find out more about you and get your book, Addicted to the Monkey Mind?
Wonderful. So I would recommend Amazon is the best place, you know, to get the book, Addicted to the Monkey Mind, Change the Programming That Sabotages Your Life. And we love, there's amazing reviews already out there, so you can read what other people say. And we'd love to have more reviews. So if people, you know, enjoy the book, please, and, you know, it's always really helpful for people to know from people who have read the book.
Yep.
And then my main website is three words spelled out. It's The Exclusive Hawaii.
Yay.
Those three words spelled out.
Yep.
And that has our beautiful center in Hawaii. Mm. It talks about a lot of the methods we have in there, experiential engagement therapy, core belief restructuring. So there's also a lot of valuable information. Mm-hmm. And we help people not just with drugs and alcohol, but with all kinds of issues. People come from, you know, for just anxiety,
sure.
You know, major anxiety they haven't been able to shake loose. Or
right.
A lot of people have career issues and they're workaholic.
Sure.
Or, you know, whatever issues that they've been struggling with that they're really wanting to learn specific skills to change.
Right.
And it's a beautiful setting. It's a 52-acre property in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And it's
it's gorgeous.
Couldn't be a better place to do deep work like that.
That's right, exactly. And guys, in case you missed listening to the show, you know, you could, of course, get on into the archives tomorrow. All the reruns, downloads are available, and also on iTunes, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle. J.F. Benoit, thank you so much for being such a wonderful guest here on the couch. Such a great book. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me. It was wonderful.
Oh, you're so welcome. Keep in touch. I'll look forward to chatting with you again, and looking forward to the next book.
Wonderful.
All right.
As you say here, aloha.
Aloha. Thank you. Bye-bye now. Wish I was in Hawaii. All right. This is Dr. Michelle, and thank you for being on the couch today. Again, the book is called Addicted to the Monkey Mind, Change the Programming That Sabotages Your Life. So much more. It's not all about the breathing, folks. It's so much more. And it's a great step-by-step self-help book. Thanks for listening, guys. I'll be back next week with more great information to help you and your relationships and your self-esteem. Take good care, and take good care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. Bye-bye now.